Ladies and gentlemen, you are here to witness This Week in Mormons as we bring to you once more.
This is like the dunk contest that the NBA recently had. You're used to it being really lame, but then all of a sudden the lazy boy dunk brings it back out.
Did they do that during the All-Star game this past weekend?
Oh, yeah.
So I was sort of tricked into watching some of the NBA All-Star game before I realized what was happening.
Were you for the West or the East?
I was for the North, as I always am.
I have a policy.
If you are a racist, I will attack you with the North. That is my longstanding policy. So
I believe that to be true.
No, I was at my in-laws. I'm in California right now. It was on. No one else was there but me and my brother-in-law. And we were probably the two who care about it the least. And I was like, hey, man. Let's watch this thing.
Like, these guys are pretty good, but they aren't trying very hard.
He was busy tooling around with his home media server via his tablet. You would love him. He's a very technical.
I hate your brother. I hate guys that like dink around on their tablets when you're trying to watch a basketball
game. Well, it was okay because neither of us care. Eventually, I got tired of it, and I probably put on like the Food Network or something. So it was great.
Well, I'm glad everything worked out.
I am a man's man.
I like that they did that on, what was it, the day before Valentine's Day?
I think it was on Valentine's Day. Wasn't it on Sunday?
No. It was the day before.
I feel like it was on Sunday itself.
I know this because I went to a fancy steak restaurant that gave me very poor service, and I watched this game with all of the other patrons at the bar.
I feel like, okay. And
as a Mormon, I feel like I've cracked some sort of a code. Because I've never used the bar service anywhere I go. But then all of a sudden I was like, wait, I'm alone. I'm just going to go sit at the bar, not order a drink, so they hate me. But I get the food, and I never have a wait. So I can go to the fanciest restaurant, just go sit at the bar.
Service is where it's at. Even if you're going to regular restaurants, you often find that you can get like lunch specials that are only available at the bar. All sorts of things, folks. That's a life hack for you right there.
There's a whole world.
So what you need to do is gather like your seven children, take them all to the bar, everybody.
And when you go to Texas Roadhouse, do not sit at a table. Just take all the kids.
Wait a minute. So the great is that? I mean, we don't always name names, but that is the great steakhouse you went to was Texas.
No, I wish. Okay. I wish. In Utah, fun fact, they don't have bars in these. So I drove all the way out to this one because I like it because I can get a $13 meal there full of steak and everything.
So basically drove to Wyoming is what you're saying.
No, I drove to like Murray.
Did you go to Wendover?
I wish. And so I went to this place and they don't have it. So I had to drive back to the fancy steak place by my apartment. I wish they would have it. Because they were like, oh, no. We're actually turning really fast. It's only an hour wait for me to sit alone and eat a steak. And I was like, no.
If that doesn't say Valentine's Day, I don't know what does. Well done, sir.
Jeff, my life is hard, and I don't know what to do.
I am often here to give you advice. I think you choose not to listen to me because as I have, you know, I don't want to describe it as moved along, but as I have, you know, I've gotten married, had a kid and stuff, I feel like you discredit my advice more than you used to, as if I don't understand your problems.
Well, I do, and the reason why is because the second you taste of this success you speak of, all of the trials up to that point become anecdotal. Every breakup was just leading you to your beautiful Danielle.
Every
little thing along the way that I like to bemoan and commiserate with other people that also hate their situation in life because of this. You look at it and you say, but if you wouldn't have had that, I wouldn't have found my beautiful wife.
That's not true. Like, I've observed some of your dating things, and I'm just basically thinking you're being stupid. It has nothing to do with it.
All right. Let's hear it. What am I being? Come on.
Well, right now I don't know because you have shunned me. You have shunned me Amish style. I do not know. I have no opinion.
I have. I've cut you out of the. You and my mom get the same dating updates at this point.
See, that's very troubling. I'm an expert in the field. I ask my wife.
You used to be. At this point, Jeff, you are a bumbling idiot when it comes to dating because you can't remember any of the moves, any of the expertise you developed over all this time.
Well, yeah. If you're looking for someone to help you know
God.
how to
You were amazing.
I'll say if this. You,
For the listener, if you could just, if you could have seen, he would go to women and he would self-describe himself as having a PhD in making out because he had studied for so long and so many years. And they would just fall at his feet. They would just, yes, Jeff, I am for education. I will participate in your study, they would say. And off he'd go. And now, married to a woman.
I took a sabbatical from my postgraduate research. What can I say?
The fellowship ended.
The fellowship is over. It's true. That's true. If you're looking for someone to help you have game on picking up, Al, I'm useless. But if you're looking for someone who understands the nuances of having a successful, emotionally and spiritually intimate relationship, I'm also useless, but I feel like I'm trying. So
I'm sorry, Jeff. Right now I'm dating. I'm in the dating world. There's none of that.
And you will forever be in said dating world until
no one ever tries to have emotionally and spiritually stable relationships.
You are like the young Padawans that Anakin slays, and deservedly so. As you listen to Master Jeffrey
Splinter.
I'll accept Splinter. I can be a kung fu rat, karate rat, whatever. Yeah, I'm down. Yeah. Whatever he is. Okay. I don't know which martial art Splinter practices in particular, but
I think it was Daewoo.
No, they made cars and stereos.
I believe. How did they started coming over? They're in Europe a lot more, but like I felt like they could have beat Kia to the
point. I believe Daewoo was a GM owned brand, and then they phased it out because they've tried to broaden the reach of Chevy internationally.
They decided that nobody likes a two-word car brand.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. Like in Europe, most GM cars outside of the UK are sold under the Opel brand, and they actually, I believe, are planning on phasing that out and making those into Chevys. They were Chevys to begin with. They were the same car, but they were always branded as an Opel. In the UK, the same car is branded as a Vauxhall. But
okay. Well, what do you do?
This is what you learned. You served a mission in Ukraine. Everyone drove Ladas. So you're an expert.
No, they had a lot of Opals there.
Yeah, you probably saw your fair share of Opals. There was a chirping boy.
Hey, so up, you're in California right now. You enjoyed Disneyland this week?
Yeah, we came out here.
What has your life been?
We're here in Anaheim. I felt like a tourist at Disneyland for the first time in my life in that I am staying by the convention center in Anaheim and like walked with all the tourists, the peasants. To Disneyland's gates. Felt very strange. But it was
why
still
did
good.
You do that?
Why did I walk with the tourists or why did
why
I go
are
to
you
Disneyland?
Staying, why are you staying in a hotel there? Your family lives right there.
Oh, well, we're here for a conference for my wife. And so I tag along to be, you know, the babysitter, be supportive. I'm kind of like the trainer in the corner during a boxing match.
Sure. She says, Jeff, I don't know if I can close this deal. And you say, babe.
She comes back after a session and says, you know, you're going to have to cut me. And I was like, all right, it's a boxing reference for our
you
listeners.
Say, I'm the one who knocks.
What is...
And she says, yes.
Something's like, oh, it's Disneyland's fireworks. I thought someone was like banging on our window and we're on the 17th floor.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, what is this? Those are the fireworks from Disneyland.
Oh, I'm sorry. Disneyland fireworks are going off.
Also known as the happiest place on earth. And what a time I had. I'm currently staring at my window, attempting to behold the fireworks. Alas, well, I cannot see them. I do not have a view of the castle.
I've been living in New York this week. I'm out here. It's been delightful. I went and saw Hamilton, which was...
Was it amazing?
Fabulous play. Fabulous play.
Does it deserve the accolades it has received?
It actually does. So the cool part, I think that was the most entertaining, was the crowd really gets into it. And so we're like yelling back at them. And I mean, it's like when you go to a movie in Harlem and... You're supposed to participate with the movie, and you yell back and you boo the bad guys, and like I mean you're throwing popcorn and stuff at because you're in a theater predominantly filled with African Americans.
A lot of racially sensitive comments coming from you right now. Yes, continue. Very good.
But Hamilton it's all black people in the play too, and so the people going. I mean, it's this sort of expectation. There's the you know, the fourth wall is broken when you're. In these situations, you're just kind of going along with them. It was a blast. That's very entertained.
No, but is there a show-stopping number like Defying Gravity? Because really, I compare everything to Wicked.
No, they did have a rap battle, a series of rap battles where George Washington would pit Jefferson and Hamilton against each other in rap battles, which was very entertaining.
It really gets rippity-raptastic. That's outstanding.
It does. And then also, I believe, who is it? King Henry? King George? King Henry. Probably. King George, maybe. The eighth. The one that's the eighth. he does.
You mean the king during the American Revolution?
Right.
That was George.
King George. He's played by the guy that does Kristoff in Frozen. And it's done wonderfully well. That might be a standout number for you.
Well, that's exciting. Look at you. The original, not even a tour yet. You are watching a it's not even that old. I mean, when did it premiere? Not even that long ago.
I don't know, like last week. And then tonight, to celebrate, I went to a Russian bathhouse, which I'd never been to before.
Well, sure.
There is more naked in a Russian bathhouse, men predominantly.
Well, yeah, that's how they work.
And maybe more than I was prepared for. And then a lot of like going into the coldest water I've ever been in my life. And then into the 185 degree sauna and then back and forth. And that was my night.
And
I sweat a lot and then I froze. And then I sweat and I froze.
And that was some form of cleanse. Some you just said, hey, this has to happen.
From what I understand, if you were raised in a culture where that was the thing, you believe in its healing properties and otherwise... There is no scientific research to back up.
Walk me through the genesis of how one goes to a Russian bathhouse in Lower Manhattan, I think, somewhere down there.
Down on Wall Street. So my buddy Tom says, hey, we should go and do something tonight. Do you have any plans? And I say, no, what are you thinking? And he says, well, we can go see a movie. We go to one of those escape rooms. We go get dinner.
Oh, you love escape rooms. You enjoyed the last time.
Or we could go to a Russian bathhouse. And I said, stop at the Russian bathhouse. That is what we're doing. Because I had to try. We got to go. You got to go and see a Russian bathhouse. And so I walked in. It was all in Russian. It was like I stepped into another country. And I'm talking in Russian. I'm joking with the guys. They're all laughing as we sit naked in the sauna. It was quite the night.
Did you speak to them in like filthy Sergic the whole time? And they were like,
Jeff, I speak a clean Russian. Sometimes when I'm ordering towels and trying to get a bottle of water, I'm great at Russian.
You sure? Okay. You didn't ask any of the guys if they're from like Donetsk, right? You said Donetsk. I hope you kept it real.
No, I asked if they were from Poltava.
Oh, who wants to be? Poltava is also in Ukraine. Al, it's very confusing for people. What are they?
God's
from?
Country.
You're like, where are you from? Chernihiv, and they're like, say what?
Chernihiv.
Yeah, that's the one.
Chernihiv. All right, so anyway, we got some Russian stuff.
Chernihiv?
No, we don't have Russian stuff. We have Mormon stuff.
We have Mormon stuff. We do have one Ukraine mentioned, though, this week, so we'll get to that, I guess, eventually. But to tie it all in, it's been a great week in Mormonism. Lots of things have happened.
What do we have? We should start off, then, with the donation of $1.2 million to Ukraine for humanitarian aid. Do you see this? The church donated $1.2 million to Ukraine as Ukraine is currently going through a bit of a crisis. There have been, and I haven't confirmed this, but this was told to me by a Ukrainian girl last week. 8,000 deaths so far in the resistance.
Why haven't you confirmed that? That's a known number. That's true.
I just haven't Googled it. I didn't know. I didn't want to lead my people astray.
I like that you go to your friend when I deal professionally in this stuff all the time.
How many people have died there?
Yeah, she's spot on. The local knows.
Okay.
It's so, eased up a bit, but yeah, it's a mess there. A lot of problems.
So the church has donated money to help them.
I'm hoping it's $1.2
million. Providing humanitarian assistance to vulnerable populations.
It's not 1.2 million hryvnia, I hope, because that would just be sad.
That would be, they never say dollars. They're very strategic about this. It's $100,000.
The hryvnia has fallen so far, that would only be $45,000 now.
Whoa. One hryvnia.
One hryvnia is, it's one hryvnia now equals
26 hryvnia to a dollar.
Almost 4 cents.
When I was there.
It was five. It was just five. It was
five. It was five hryvnia to the dollar.
It's fallen quite a bit.
I just want to go and get a Big Mac meal, man.
So I'm going to assume this is in dollars, and we're playing ball. What's a little unclear, though, is so it's Mormon. It's under the a UN program, and this is being sold like it's $1.2 million from the church. But I think it might be a joint donation between the church and UNDP to do it together. So I don't know if the church is fronting all of this. It doesn't make it any less important, but it's a little unclear in the press release from the church about it. And yeah, it's the helping people with it.
The Big Mac costs $1.60 in Ukraine right now, in case you were keeping track on the Big Mac Index.
Oh, that's the dream. I love the Big Mac Index. Do you ever read that in The Economist every year when they put it out?
No, it's genius.
That's pretty smooth. So let's hope this gets to the right people. The idea is to get assistance to people living in areas outside the control of the government of Ukraine. Now, because we know the church has tacitly accepted Russia's annexation of Crimea, they can't be talking about that. So they must be referring to rebel-occupied territories in the Luhansk.
Donetsk and Luhansk.
And yeah. Donetsk regions.
But it was great. When I was over there, the church, man, like as a missionary, the church was doing a lot of humanitarian aid stuff over there. And one of the challenges you'd always run into is finding meaningful organizations to donate to that were actually going to use the money for what you were thinking they were going to use it for. And so this is the, what is this, like the UN's aid organization? Is that what it was?
UN, it's, well, they have many aid organizations, but yeah.
Yeah, so good. Hopefully this will get
UNDP is their development program.
UNDP.
Creatively UNDP. Named. Well, and they need that a lot. I mean, the people need it. And then if the war in Ukraine ever firmly eases up, which lately it's been sliding back into flaring conflict, if it does ease up, the rebuilding everything there is going to be a nightmare too. I mean, that alone is going to be just a monumental task,
yeah,
trying to fix that. And that was Ukraine's industrial heartland. And you destroy that, and it's like, great, now we've got to rebuild everything. It's also why Russia doesn't want to annex it, because what's in it for Russia? They would have to rebuild this just trashed area. What's the fun in that for anybody? So lots of messes in Ukraine, folks, but good to see people giving aid. They still need more.
Agreed.
Get in there and make it
he
happen.
He speaks for all of us.
Thank you. So in big news in the United States this past week, you saw that Antonin Scalia, Supreme Court Justice, died this past week, right?
Yes.
I think that was kind of hard to miss.
Is it, Jeff, let me just ask you, is it weird that they did not do an autopsy?
The autopsy? I understand. Yeah, it's a little strange. I admit I don't fully understand the rationale behind that. And a lot of the stuff that went down with all of
anytime
that.
Anytime a Supreme Court justice dies, can we just make it a rule that you should check them?
Some of that is because of Texas state law. Texas has really loose laws when it comes to having a doctor officially sign off on death and causes of death. And so, because I believe even the doctor declared him dead without even seeing the body, if I'm not mistaken. He did it. Sounds like a setup. He did it on the phone.
He's like, describe him to me. Well, he's dead and not moving.
So I'm just going to be optimistic in like the general like goodness of us as a society and assume that Scalia did indeed die of natural causes and this happens and we should celebrate his career regardless of which side you're on politically and mourn the loss of a great man and jurist, and that's all well and good. And so now, of course, there's all the questions about who's going to replace him, how's all that going to go down. We're not going to spend much time on that, but a couple things here is it sort of relates to Mormons. So Glenn Beck, Brother Beck, everyone. We love Brother Beck. He's a kind young man. And I'm going to get on the Huffington Post for this a little bit. The Huffington Post's headline says, Glenn Beck thinks God killed Antonin Scalia to help Ted Cruz get elected president. Now, yes. You can sort of get there by putting a couple different things together. But Glenn Beck himself never says those words. What Glenn Beck does say is that he basically thinks this is God trying to wake the American people up, that a great supporter of liberty has been allowed to die because Americans are not valuing their liberty enough. And as such, this is a wake-up call for Americans to elect one who will protect liberty. And that's as much as Glenn Beck has said. But the other thing is Glenn Beck has been very adamantly in favor of Ted Cruz for president. So you put the two and two together, and Glenn Beck is saying, God let Scalia die so that we could elect Ted Cruz or someone like Ted Cruz, but Ted Cruz, to be president. Very interesting.
Why did Glenn Beck not love Scalia? He seems to have some sort of a... I wish I knew more of the intricacies of Glenn Beck. Do you ever feel like I just wish that there was a book he'd written or a series of books he'd written that we could read about?
Or like a whole network of programming. Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't know why that stuff doesn't exist for everybody. It's just very strange.
So along these same lines, if I may change the subject just slightly, the Genesis Choir...
Hey, I wasn't done.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, we're not done. So I think that's interesting that Glenn Beck is speaking for that. Now, also, we have a lot of groups who think that this really is an inside job, that Scalia was offed so that Obama could push his...
Well, it could happen, couldn't it?
Anything could happen. I mean...
Jeff, no autopsy. He's in Texas at a luxury ranch with other celebrities. Does this not sound like every movie you've ever seen?
The record to show that Far West Texas, the word luxury does not apply to really anything sort of remotely within driving distance of El Paso. Let's be careful how we throw that around. So I fell upon a Facebook group. There are many, many very conservative Mormons, and that is lovely. Do you hear those fireworks? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, my goodness. There are many Facebook groups of many people with different thoughts, and that's fine. But there's one I was not aware of, which is called Awaken to Our Awful Situation. And it is a blog basically devoted to what almost borders on Ezra Taft Benson worship. And they put up a meme, and I'm only talking about this because they quote 3 Nephi 7:1, which says, "They did destroy upon the judgment seat, yea, did murder the chief judge of the land," with a picture of Scalia.
Yo, boy.
And so, of course, for one thing, you know, Scalia is not that was not the chief judge in the first place.
He was the supreme judge.
He was an associate judge. He wasn't the chief judge.
Supreme Court judge.
But this is just so fascinating to me because I don't walk in these circles, and I guess I say it honestly with a bit of mockery in a way because I don't get it. But I think it's very interesting to see that there are large groups of Mormons organized on Facebook who are pushing content like this, where people are having, you know, that basically the current presidential administration is like unto the Gadianton robbers, and we are destroying the chief judge. Like, we should believe this stuff. I just think that it's very, very, very strange.
It is strange.
I'm not comfortable with that.
Here's the thing that I always think of, though, is that yes, it seems outrageous. If this were ever actually happening, though, let's say you had a Frank Underwood going for the White House, we would all sort of continue in that same vein of like, no, that's crazy. Nobody murders people. No, this doesn't happen. You don't off guys that you disagree with. Not in our world. And then every now and then, like today I ran into a guy, I'm pretty sure was a CIA agent. And I'm just like, I'm like asking him these stories.
Was this in the Russian bathhouse?
I wish it was in the Russian bathhouse. That'd be amazing. And but as you're chatting with him, you're like, this whole world exists that I don't. And I choose not to think about.
Yes, espionage and subterfuge and things are real, but...
Yeah. But I don't... not in America, right, Jeff?
Oh, I'm sure it still happens in America, but I...
But not with Scalia, right, Jeff?
No, not with Scalia. Not with Scalia.
Oh, good. I'm glad, because he was in Texas.
Did you see that man? That man was only a couple of manicottis away from dying of a heart attack instead. Let's be honest, folks. It was going to happen eventually.
They had it coming.
And besides, if they really wanted it to happen that way, because now, of course, there's many calls from the right for President Obama.
Why wouldn't you use ricin, that drug we all learned about from Breaking Bad?
Yeah. Or whatever drug Putin used on that one guy in Britain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or whatever drug Yushchenko had used on him by Yanukovych.
Yeah.
Speaking of espionage among politics.
And back to Russian bathhouses, apparently.
This is unrelated to anything we're going to talk about. Did you see the news story where the Pope yelled at somebody? this last week.
No, I saw the news story that the Pope called Donald Trump not a Christian, but I did not see the Pope yelling at somebody.
No, yes, there's a great one where the Pope was walking. Somebody reached out and grabbed his robe and tripped him onto a guy in a wheelchair. And he gets up and he's like, quit being so selfish. And everybody's like, the Pope had a human moment. It's fine.
I need to see this video. I'll look it up later on. Was he trying to like touch a robe like the woman with Christ?
Yeah, and he was like, virtue has gone out from me. But instead of saying that, he said, quit being so selfish. You knocked me over.
I want to see like our general authorities do that. When you're nagging them, when you're still writing letters to Salt Lake, even though they say that not to do it, for them just to respond with not the kind, brothers and sisters, we encourage you to speak to your bishop and stake president. But just say, quit being so selfish. We are busy people. We think you're...
Could
you think,
see, like, Elder Bednar slipping on the ice and be like, mother ever?
You'd be like, actually, Elder, I think Elder Bednar is one of the ones who doesn't even think swear words. So, no. But...
When I was on my mission, we had this elder who was a great elder, like above and beyond, wore the vest under the suit coat sort of thing. Like, he was really shape-shaped.
I didn't know that was the...
Well, I say that because I made fun of guys that wore sweater vests, and he was devoted.
He was ship-shape in Bristol fashion.
But time. But as we walked out of a district meeting one time, he and I were the last ones out, and he slips on a stair, and it's just like, he just yells the F word, and then like looks up frantically to see if anybody noticed. I'm the only one that heard it, and I'm like, tee hee hee hee. We ran off. It was very entertaining though, because when you don't expect it out of somebody, it's like when your grandma swears or something, you're like, whoa, where'd that come from?
That's why I'm a firm believer that we must save our profanity and save even short tempers for the moments that matter. Right? If you're throwing it out all over the place, people, you're not gonna shock anybody when it actually happens. Like that's when it really resonates.
This is the same conversation Jeff is going to use with his children to help them save themselves from marriage.
Yep. I'm going
to
say, this is what you do. Don't just save your swearing. Do it at a time when it matters.
Save it all for when it matters.
Save it all for that special moment. That's what matters. Whatever that may be.
So anyway, there's a Genesis Gospel Choir.
You're like so big saying. On the Genesis Choir. I'm very excited.
I wanted to talk about this because I love it. So there's this ward in Vegas that's doing a Baptist or Methodist or Pentecostal choir. And
no, it's the Genesis group. It's been around for a very long time. This is not super. Does it say they're in Vegas?
But they're doing this like sing in church sacrament meetings.
Oh, they performed in Vegas.
Which the great thing about this is that sacrament meetings, they won't even allow brass instruments anymore. Now we got some tambourines and a little. I hope they dress in like the big robes and stuff and just bring that the whole Mormon piece. And they would be like BYU colors. That should be their robes.
Uh huh.
Obviously.
No, it's gonna be Vocal Point. That's what I want in sacrament meeting.
Sons of Provo performing.
I'll still stand by that movie, man. I will not stand by many Mormon films, but I will stand by Sons of Provo, happily. So the funny thing about the Genesis Choir stuff, well, not the funny thing, but isn't it kind of funny how, why are we so stodgy in that sense?
Very stodgy.
Or is this the Genesis Choir people? Because there's quotes in here of people kind of saying like, let's lighten up a bit, people. Let's enjoy this. And I think that there's merit to that.
Could you imagine if you went to church and enjoyed the meetings, but, and like there was work put into the meetings so that you would enjoy them?
But I guess it's definitely individual to everybody, because singing hymns, for example, is a form of worship, a very reverent form.
So it's
of
like
worship.
we've talked about recently. Reverence does not equal silence, and that is the trouble that we as Mormons have, because we expect, like in our minds, if we had an absolutely silent sacrament meeting, that would be a spiritual meeting.
I still disagree with you that there's this assumption that we all feel that way. That if there's sacrament meeting, that will be spiritual.
Do a survey of all of the bishops in the land and ask them what they wish, if they could change one thing about their sacrament meetings, what they would change. I bet a majority of them would say reverence. And if you ask them what they mean by reverence, they would say, I wish that they were able to have a quieter setting.
Well, maybe I think when they say they want a quieter setting, I think it's just because our meetings, you know, so often you have crying kids and stuff like that. And nowadays you do have plenty of people who are busy doing other things on their phones, which is defeating the purpose, right? Because that's...
Nothing shakes you out of your phone like a gospel choir, though. You get a little sway.
That's fair,
there.
But that's putting the onus on the gospel choir and not on you to man up and just not look at your phone, right? I love it when people blame how boring sacrament meeting is for the reason why they're on their phone. It's a sort of a catch-22 circular reasoning thing. Like, well, if this were more interesting, I wouldn't be on my phone. But maybe it will be more interesting if you get off your phone and
that's what I always say.
Start to do it.
Get off your phone and all of a sudden interesting things happen.
All the time. All around.
It's like that Jim Carrey movie, Yes Man.
Does that happen in that film?
I don't know.
I've never seen. I stopped watching Jim Carrey movies at like Me, Myself, and Irene or something. I don't know. It's been a long time, man.
That was rated R, Jeff.
Okay, then it wasn't that one. I was thinking of Fun with Dick and Jane. That's the one I was thinking of. That's
now you only watch Adam Sandler films. Oh, good.
Absolutely. And mostly only the current ones. I basically only watch Pixels and whatever the most recent one he did with Drew Barrymore was. That's all.
Fever Pitch.
No, that had Jimmy Fallon.
Also
not a very good
Wedding
movie.
Singer.
No, The Wedding Singer is a good movie.
I don't know what you're trying to do.
Or Made in Manhattan has none of them, but J-Lo and Ralph Fiennes. That's just delightful.
Geniuses.
So I think we have different opinions here on the Sunday stuff, but I don't think bishops are saying they want it to be quiet because they think quiet means the spirit, but more of like distractions, because distractions do detract from a spiritual experience. And so if it's a noisy room because of kids and this and that, it can be a distraction.
What if it's a noisy room because the gospel choir is getting their hippity-hoppity going?
Well, that's different than everyone's watching the gospel
Joy
choir. But then we have
world.
To ask ourselves, and I think this still is a personal...
boys and girls.
It's still a personal thing. Is the gospel choir performing or are they worshiping? And there's a fine line there with music, because we don't do music in church for the sake of performance to be appreciated.
That's not true.
No, we do in the church at other settings, but for sacrament meeting and other things
like
that.
No, even in sacrament meeting, when a choir gets up to perform,
it's not a
pray before everyone else.
It's not a performance, Al.
Sure,
church music is a part of worship. It specifically talks in the manual that it is not a performance.
It should be.
And that's the difference. I understand how we view it as a performance. I mean, I get it.
Every conductor out there sees it as a performance.
So I get that. I completely get that because I have been that conductor. I know what we're dealing with here. But the idea behind it is not to be performed. Music is to be felt and worshipped. That is the whole point of it. And I'm not knocking anybody who feels you might feel the spirit from doing the gospel choir stuff. I'm not anyone to say whether that's better or worse. I don't know if Al is trying to argue that maybe our traditions in the church are derived from it being sort of rooted in old, early 19th century Protestant hymnal tradition, and that is why we're so weird with it today. That might be the case, but I don't know.
Whatever, Jeff. Whatever.
You love me. There's no point pretending.
I'm not talking anymore about the Genesis Choir.
You're the one who is so excited about it. A couple quick temple mentions for you, folks. The church has finally announced the dedication dates for the Fort Collins, Colorado Temple.
I've heard of those.
Fort Collins, Colorado is an hour or so north of Denver. They've been building the temple there for some time now. I forget when it was announced, but it's been a little while. It'll be
impressive to have two temples in Colorado that close together.
It speaks, they've had a lot of swells in membership. The Fort Collins area in general has grown quickly, and with it a lot more Mormons. Because, yeah, it's not crazy far away. And they announced it back in, it's been 5 years now, though. April 2011 is when they announced it. It'll only be the second temple, like you said, in Colorado. The other one's in Denver, which has been there since the 80s. And this will be, let's see, open house will begin on Friday, August 19th.
This will be.
And run through Saturday, September 10th. Then, as usual, they close it for a month or so for final preps. They will have a cultural celebration on October 15th.
What culture will we celebrate in Fort Collins?
I never know.
Will it be the fort culture, the culture of trading with Native Americans?
It's going to be that plain culture. And by plain, I mean the plains, not vanilla.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I was...
Well, maybe vanilla, too, for that matter. I don't really know what they're...
It'll be the very vanilla culture.
I don't know what one celebrates in Florida. If you had, like, a Boulder, Colorado temple, I'd get it. There'd be interesting things to celebrate there. But Fort Collins, I don't understand. Either way, folks, on Sunday, October 16th, the temple will be dedicated. So it's happening. And then good for them. They deserve it.
Oh, neat.
Last and other temple news, the church has broken ground on the Kinshasa Harry Democratic Kinshasa. Republic of the Congo temple.
Which the Harry Kinshasas are a wonderful religion.
No, that's not it. Kinshasa is the capital of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, across the Congo River from Brazzaville, the capital of the Republic of the Congo. Two different countries with capital cities across a river from one another. How often do you see that?
Never.
Never.
Never, except for the Zarahemla times.
Well, yeah, sure. So this temple was announced in October 2011, finally breaking ground. It's the first temple in Central Africa. At this point, there are three temples in Africa. You've got one in Ghana, one in Nigeria, and one in South Africa. But they're working on the temple down in Durban, South Africa, and now this one in Kinshasa, which is great news. The church has had lots of growth. And there's going to be the temple in Ivory Coast. I forgot.
Way to go, Kinshasa. Way to go.
It makes me honestly very happy because the church has done very well in the DRC. And the DRC has had just a rough 20 years. Just a complete, massive civil war trickled over from Rwanda. Millions and millions of people died. It's rarely even talked about in Western media how many people died. And so it's good to see some pleasant thing happening. It's in some way, and that the gospel is spreading and giving people hope, and that they can have their very own temple right there. Good for them.
I've heard of that.
I'm excited.
That is good. Let's see. The Ordained Women has an update. We haven't talked about them in a long time.
Thank heavens. I mean, yes. Tell me more.
Jeff, no. There's a this is actually a fairly positive move by them because they've shifted a little bit. They're still their overarching purposes for women to be given the priesthood, but
yeah,
the things that they're pushing for at this point, they've revised their requests to something that I actually agree with for the most part. They've found things that are more policy changes and not theological shifts, and are promoting those. So things like they'd like to be able to hold their babies while male priesthood holders perform the naming blessing.
That one wouldn't even be a policy shift. There's nothing on the books that says someone else can't hold the kid.
I know, but it never happens.
It does. Yeah. It does say in the text for the blessing, you know, in the suggestions, like the father and the people present take the baby in their arms and give it a blessing. But I don't really think there's a hard and fast rule that says a woman couldn't.
No, that's the thing is there's a lot of that stuff that's just sort of cultural.
That one's a cultural assumption, I think. Yeah.
There's also to be a witness at marriages in temples or at baptisms. These are both roles reserved for males, typically priesthood males. And they're, you know, that's more of a policy thing than a theological determination from what I understand.
Let me ask you about those two, though. I understand it. I see what you're saying, but
There is a priesthood. It's a priesthood duty.
I understand that, like,
serve as a witness
physically
from the
a woman.
Covenants, yeah.
Obviously, physically, a woman can observe a baptism being done appropriately just as well as anybody else, right? So I just wonder what is the priesthood background?
Well, because you're witnessing,
so
you're witnessing a priesthood ordinance. That's what you're trying to make sure that's done correctly. And I guess the assumption would be that if you do not hold the priesthood, you wouldn't necessarily know what you're trying to make sure was
Well, maybe happening. Not you wouldn't know, but if you don't hold the priesthood, perhaps you are not in a position to effectively nullify that attempt at the ordinance and request that it be performed again.
So a little muddier there, but still,
it's that.
Fine.
I would like the stake presidents and bishops among us to please chime in
with
on this one.
Sit with young Mormon women during their private worthiness interviews with local male leaders. And I actually don't have a problem with that either.
No, that makes sense.
The challenge with that is, like, when you're a 15-year-old boy or girl, to confess anything is a pretty traumatic thing to confess it. I wonder from a teenage girl's mind, is it easier to confess something to your bishop if you have your young woman's leader there, or any leader there, any like female representative
know.
There,
I mean,
or is that harder?
And I guess
it depends on the bishop.
And I can't pretend to.
Don't yawn. No, Jeff.
I can't pretend to understand that completely, just not being having been a teenage girl and knowing how awkward maybe that feels or doesn't feel being alone with a bishop. I don't know. But I understand people's concerns there, that they feel like that's just kind of weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, I think there's a fairly moderate approach from ordained women, which is a refreshing change.
As far as the interviews go, Al, do you think there are any issues with the fact that the bishop, as the judge in Israel, is the one who should receive confessions, etc., and someone else being there sort of runs against that? Someone beyond, like, anyone, you know, being a translator or somebody who needs to be there for that purpose. So beyond the comfort thing, would it be strange to have someone who is not authorized as a judge, as someone to work one through the repentance process? Like, I mean, I'm an Elders Quorum president, but I don't get called to sit in with the bishop to help out, you know, just because someone feels awkward. That's not my place. And I'm not nullifying what women are pushing
question,
for here.
The question is exactly that. If that person, let's say one of your brothers had a better relationship with you than with the bishop, and what he wanted to go and see the bishop, but he asked that you be present also.
He could maybe do that, but I think a lot of bishops would say, no, I should probably be alone with him. And I wouldn't question that.
But honestly, as a bishop, I don't see any doctrine.
I mean, likewise, like I've had people come to me wondering how much they can talk about with me in my role. And I've said, like, I'm not the guy for
everything.
Tell me everything, and also please give me your personally identifiable information. So I don't know, but I agree with you all. I think this is a good, it's nice to see a moderate approach. Ordained Women still has its overarching goals, but it's nice to see them sort of admit that maybe the first time around didn't work.
I think that this would be positive change in the church. Because a lot of these, like we talked about, serving as a Sunday school president, things like that that are more cultural-based and not doctrine-based, their policy that exists just because, for the sake of policy, I think that's fine to sort of lobby for change and enact change, be an agent of change in the church to help move us towards more equality where appropriate. So good for them now.
All right, moving on and keeping in the vein of controversial fringe groups, not really. Let's talk a little bit about LGBT issues briefly. So first, the church is sort of, the reporting here is iffy at KUTV. But we're talking about the church's involvement in a bill that's trying to make its way through the Utah legislature that would sort of make the penalties for hate crimes greater, especially if against the LGBT population, is my understanding. That's the best I get from it. I've looked at the bill briefly. But, you know, a hate crime is a hate crime, whichever way
you spin
it.
Can't ask you to look at the bill any more than briefly, Jeff. Thank
no.
you for doing.
Well, I didn't. I did not.
As
I did
a journalist.
Not. I'm sorry. You could have looked at it while you were sitting naked with a bunch of Russians. So I don't really. I don't see how this is all on me, honestly.
Okay.
Al, I mean, come on. But basically, the church has said through a spokesman that the Utah legislature achieved something extraordinary last year when they talked about trying to balance religious liberty and gay rights. They worry, though, that for some reason this bill would tweak the balance of that a little bit in a sort of bad way. And they haven't elaborated on it, which makes it a little frustrating to try to fully understand what we're talking about here. But they seem to think it somehow puts, maybe takes away a little bit of religious freedom. I hope the religious freedom is not a cover for hate crimes and et cetera. But it's a little iffy. I don't have huge comments on this because I think it's very much an evolving issue. There's not a ton there yet. But the church seems to be a little uncomfortable with trying to come down harder on hate crimes in Utah.
Well, this is a tough piece because when you want to pass a internet like surveillance bill, right? What you do is you attach it to, or you plead the case of like, this is to go after child pornography. And then anybody that says that they are against these, you know, looser restrictions on privacy things they've positioned it in a way where they've effectively said that they are for child pornography. And you can't say that. So you have to be for these actual technology restrictions or I guess privacy violations that you would normally be like, no, this is not okay. But because it's attached to the right bill, it does this. And so this is this, like, there's a little bit of this at play here where where the church is like, hey, listen, it's not that we are for hate crimes against LGBT people. We are against these greater things that diminish, or these greater penalties that blur the lines between the religious freedoms that they're trying to protect and the LGBT rights. And so I don't think that it's necessarily they're against like punishment for hate crimes. They're against the blurring of those lines. And so that's, I mean, it's an unfortunate headline to say the least, but
yeah, it's a little confusing. So building on that, I think we talked last week about Elder Oaks speaking at Johns Hopkins, right? Didn't we talk a little bit about that last week?
We did.
Yeah. So here's a little bit more that came out of that, though. So a man got up there named Andrew Evans, who attended. They opened it up to questions, and he said, quote, less than a year ago, right here in Washington, D.C., my friend killed himself. He was Mormon and gay. You've gone on record, speaking to Elder Oaks, that the church does not give apologies. Does religious freedom absolve you from responsibility in the gay Mormon suicide crisis? So this is the first time an apostle was asked directly about what we've talked about before, people reporting numbers that dozens of gay Mormons since the November handbook change have killed themselves. So Elder Oaks has a full answer. And he says, I think that's a question that will be answered on Judgment Day. I can't answer that beyond what has already been said. I know that those tragic events happen. And it's not unique simply to the question of sexual preference. There are other cases where people have taken their own lives and blamed a church, my church, or a government, or somebody else for their taking their own lives. And I think that those things have to be judged by a higher authority than exists on this earth. I am ready to be accountable to that authority, but I think part of what my responsibility extends to is trying to teach people to be loving and civil and sensitive to one another so that people will not feel driven, whatever their policy disagreements, whatever the rules of the church or the practices of the church or any other organization, if they are administered with kindness at the highest level or at the level of the congregation or the ward, they won't drive people to take those extreme measures. That's part of my responsibility to teach that, and beyond that, I will be accountable to a higher authority for that. That's the way I look at it on that. Nobody is sadder about a case like that than I am. Maybe that's a good note to end on. So, sorry, I just didn't realize he pretty much called it off after that question, which is
interesting. It's like, we've had enough.
He's like, okay, well, so he got in there. So this is very interesting that an apostle kind of got put on the spot. What do you think about his response, Al?
It's kind of right in line with what I would expect there. And honestly, it's kind of reassuring to have him, you know, I mean, just to be heard by an apostle and be like, listen, this is a thing, right? And he says, yeah, this is a thing. It's hard for everybody. And I'm not sure, like, essentially, you know, what I heard was from him was that, you know, he's not promising that they're doing it exactly right, even, but that he feels confident in the direction they're going enough that he's like, I'm totally happy to get to the end and have my conversation with the Lord. He's like, the onus here that he's taking is that if any of these kids are feeling marginalized to the point of suicide, it's because he hasn't taught his part effectively enough of loving, accepting, encouraging, which was, I mean, I actually respect that a lot.
I do too. And I think it's good to have all the full context there and how he says, you know, that's on me. My job is to teach stuff and I'm going to have to answer to that. And I also interpret that as reminding myself that we have to like implement what we're taught. I think so often things happen in the church that are unfortunate and a lot of parties will blame the brethren. And I'll sit here and say, no, look at what they're teaching. We're just not implementing what we're being taught. Like too many people, because of cultural reasons, whatever, we just kind of keep running the course. We have people who don't believe that the essays on LDS.org are even real, right? Or that they're authored by or approved by the brethren. But nothing's perfect here. But if we would implement these things better to be loving and civil and sensitive to one another, as Elder Oaks says, that'll make a huge difference. We just have to do our part in actually making that happen. And then hopefully these people won't feel the push to kill themselves or slip into depression or any other malady, whatever it may be.
On a lighter note, if I may.
You may.
Students are protesting at BYU. What are they protesting, Jeff? What terrible heresy?
I'm assuming they want Coke in the vending machines again.
No, no. These protests are about a bench they want to move. There's some girl that went on her mission and came back to find her favorite bench gone and has protested by sitting on the floor to the point where they've returned the bench.
Al, have we found her? Have we found the future wife of yours? I feel like she fits the mold.
Screw you, Jeff. What do I always say? Screw you, Jeff. The thing of all the things to get an article written about.
People.
Can we look? You're getting your higher education. This is you going to the next level. You were in high school, and then you're going to the next level. You want to go up a notch. Go find some issues to actually be concerned about that are not your favorite bench being taken away. Well, you were gone for 2 years. You weren't even using the bench. Of course we're going to put it in storage. Stop.
I love all these quotes from her. An 18-wheeler could have driven through the hallway and not have bumped into that bench.
It was removed as a fire hazard.
The trash can that is as wide as the bench is still there. I have been sitting on the floor and no one has tripped over
livid.
Me. That's a serious attachment to a bench.
Yeah, there are some bigger issues at play here.
Now, in some of our Facebook followers...
This woman is clearly disturbed.
We had a Facebook follower who did say the bench has returned. We have not seen pictures to confirm this.
Oh, we got him.
In this serious, hard-hitting news. But apparently, Twim Nation, you did it. You did it. The bench is back. I'm just going to give everyone a round of applause.
Whatever, Jeff.
So angry all the time. Just so mad. All right, let's do a couple. Oh, we haven't talked about income inequality yet, Al, and the time is already far spent. Oh my goodness, I'm gonna leave that one.
Russell Stevenson is sure that he's got the solution to income inequality.
How so?
And I'm sure he does too.
What is the solution?
It's to be good to poor people and do good to them that.
Well, I know, because I believe the notion behind income inequality is that we get rid of, we don't have poor people. It's not be good to the ones who are poor. It's enact things that make it so there are no poor.
Yeah, essentially this is an article that whose title could easily be read, Feel the Burn. Feel the Burn.
Are you saying you don't feel the burn, Al?
So if you are for Bernie Sanders and his $17 trillion gift to America... Then you should agree with Russell Stevenson.
But Russell Stevenson is citing the Book of Mormon. So
we should have Russell on to discuss.
So
this.
Don't you, Al? Well, fun. Let's get him. Let's get him for next week. I'm down. Let's have him defend the thesis against you. I think this will be a stirring debate.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's
but,
go.
But he uses the Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon talks a lot about how the inequalities among the Nephites rose to class divisions among them and a sense of superiority and violence and all sorts of problems.
Well, it absolutely does. I mean, capitalism is a hard price to pay for economic sustainability.
So, but the Nephites were clearly not even economically sustainable. But that's not the purpose of this, is talk about which model is the most economically sustainable. It's that Russell Stevenson is arguing that this great inequality destroyed them as a people. All economic stuff aside, it destroyed. They were not one, and that's the great thing. What does it have in Moses 7:18? Right, people were of one heart and one mind. There were no divisions among them, and there were no poor among them.
Just look at how divisive Bernie Sanders' campaign is.
You're going back to Bernie because you know I've got you up against the ropes, son. You're up against the ropes.
I'm absolutely not up.
And now you're going to start throwing out ad hominem attacks like your boy Trump and just tell me like I'm ugly so my point of view cannot matter.
Jeff, if I were up against the ropes, would you be as homely as you are? I don't think so. You Rosie O'Donnell, you pig. Anyway, let's see.
He's a great guy. He's a good friend of mine. He's a great guy. It's going to be huge.
He's really good guy. You should join Motab's virtual course. I'm challenging Jeff here tonight to join Motab's course so that you can give us the inside scoop on how this goes.
It's the only way they'll have me.
Yeah. Figure this out, Jeff.
What does this mean? What is their virtual chorus?
No, so it's a YouTube choir that they're putting together, and they're accepting, so they'll give you the part to sing. We've seen this done before with the YouTube choirs, and Motab is now doing one where anybody can be a part of Motab. So it'll be the biggest sing-song fest of all time.
Will they show me if I don't wear a white shirt and do have a beard? Can I still take part?
Yeah, they might have to blur out your face, but I would suggest that anyway because you're so ugly. Like
will
that
they
Donald
accept
Trump.
Me? Will they accept me because I'm white? Do I need to be a minority to, you know?
That might help. Prominence? You might play with some of the color settings.
Because, like, I don't want to say anything, but, like, during general conference, I feel like there's sort of a cinematographic.
There is a preference. Sure.
There's sort of an affirmative action thing going on with the cameramen during general conference to try to demonstrate the diversity within our choirs. Right?
They know what they're doing.
I don't know if they have quotas for membership. I hope not. I like to believe they don't. I like to believe they don't.
The best people.
I like to believe they don't, but I can't believe they said that. It's absolutely, it disgusts me. Ridiculous, but he's a great guy. So, other quick ones. Apparently, the church is going to start digging stuff up in Oman because they want to find Nephi.
This isn't the church. This is not the church.
Sorry, I'm actually, thank you. LDS, a team of archaeologists, some of whom are LDS. Apologies for that one.
Yeah.
They've received permission from the government of Oman. Oman is on the southeastern Arabian Peninsula, jutting out into.
Oman is made for good dad jokes. A lot of Oman.
Yeah, a lot of. But it's by the Persian Gulf and the Arabian Sea, and they have agreed the government to allow some digs to happen to try to find things about what these scholars believe might have been the land of Bountiful as described by the prophet Nephi.
I believe it too.
If you've ever seen some old farms videos, the Journey of Faith thing, all about Lehi's journey through the wilderness, very interesting, compelling evidence there. And so they're gonna get
it. How fun would that be if they found like what
are they gonna find? Remnants of a tent? What are they gonna find there?
I don't know, things that Lehi accidentally left.
Well, Bountiful is where they resided for a long period of time, and it's where Nephi built his ship. Bountiful is where they set off on their journey to the.
They could find. What if they found a pickaxe there?
That's what I'm saying, or the tools, the ore. Who knows? And so the scholars have long, Mormon ones have long looked at this land because Nephi is pretty specific the way he describes the land Bountiful as far as the topography, what's there, the minerals and the metals that are available. And they've zeroed in on this part of Oman that actually fits the description very well and would make sense geographically based on the perceived route. So it's pretty cool they'll get to do this. And they tell the story of how this representative from the Sultan of Oman gave them permission. And it's a big win for everybody. I would like to stress for everyone that knows Oman is, still a Muslim country that lives under Sharia law. It's one of the chiller ones, I would say, in the area. It's not quite a United Arab Emirates or anything, but I'm just saying it's not like they just got permission.
You're not getting a shower on the airplane coming out of Oman.
There is no Etihad Airways. I don't think Oman Airlines has a fleet of A380s. That's what I'm saying, folks.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is not like getting permission to dig in like Saudi Arabia or Iran or something like that. Even though Iran might even get permission to things someday. But this is still pretty cool and that they got this to happen. And it'll be interesting to follow. I think, Al, you told me they're supposed to do daily updates once they start going.
That's what they said. That's what this Meridian magazine is claiming. So we will look forward to reposting what they post.
Though in my last thing, I really need to take Meridian and LDS Living to task for their headlines, which were grammatically improper. As they said, Omanis grant permission. Omanis is an apostrophe, which makes no sense whatsoever. That's like doesn't gel.
Omanis.
And then LDS Living reposted Meridian Magazine's article, clearly not understanding what was at stake because they basically said the same thing. So no
they
one
didn't
any
want to
of,
contradict them.
Basically, no one at either of these publications knows what the country of Oman actually is. That's what I've learned here.
I think that's a fair assessment.
So I am hereby offering my services as a geopolitical consultant. And
he's very good with geos and politicals.
And I will be happy to help you guys out.
So all right, everybody. Hey, please email us. Email is contact @thisweekatmormons.com or visit thisweekatmormons.com for all of your Mormon This Week.
It is going to be huge, everyone. I can't wait.
Huge.
And of course, you know, join us on the social media, all the various outlets. We're all over the place, folks. So join
we're
us.
Some places.
Well, yeah. But
it's fair.
I'm trying to all make right. it sound huge.
Jeff, have a wonderful week, my friend.
Thanks, buddy. You too. And we'll touch base with all of you next week. Maybe we'll see if Russell can come on and fight with Al. I'll look into it. It'll be good.
You never know.
All right.
See you, man.
See you, buddy. Thanks for listening to TWIM, folks. Have a great week. Talk to you later. Peace out.